Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
6:14 now, going to be hot today, and it may be a little bit cooler toward the weekend. More on that as we progress. And there's a whole mess going on in the Middle East. First, we'll talk about somebody who wants to come home, and I think it was Thomas Wolfright said, you can't go home again. I guess that would apply to Edward Snowden. We'll see. Bob Deitch joins us, our friend, professor of public policy at George Mason University, senior counselor to the director of the CIA, and former general counsel at the National Security Agency. So you know what you're talking about, don't you, Bob? You've been there and done that.
I'm certainly very knowledgeable about the Snowden issue, yes.
Talk about that, if you will. First of all, how damaging was it to the United States, and does it border on treason?
It was very damaging. Yeah, you might be able to make a treason case. The Constitution makes it very difficult to bring treason charges.
Tell me why, Bob, if I can slow you down a little bit. Tell me why the Constitution makes it so tough.
Because this allegation was thrown around lots of times by the British Crown prior to our revolution. And so they decided, as a matter of the Constitution, to make it very difficult to bring treason charges against people.
Okay.
The result is that there are other statutes that work just as well, and Snowden certainly violated those statutes.
Statutes such as?
Leaking classified information to people.
And what kind of penalties would he be facing for that?
Oh, yeah, for all that he released, multiple, you know, from now to the rapture.
So, well, at least he'd get out of jail that way, perhaps.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So he's been living in Russia since 2013. Apparently, he's found out that maybe that's not the best quality of life, and now he wants to come back to the United States. Is there any way he comes back to the United States and doesn't spend the rest of his life in jail? Because he's talking about getting a fair trial, but I understand the process, but is there any defense that he could mount, really?
No, and of course he'll get a fair trial, but he is qualified. He'd like to return so long as he can raise a defense that is not recognized by the courts. And so, you know, if he stands on that, he'll spend, you know, the rest of his life in Moscow. Lucky guy.
Yeah,
really nice winters there.
Yeah, so his choices are basically stay in Moscow or come back and spend his
life
in jail.
Prison.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, he put himself there. You can't blame anybody but himself for that.
Nice choice. Huh.
And how damaging was it, Bob?
It's exceedingly damaging. You know, the WikiLeaks published this stuff. And some members of the press, some publications did as well. And there was no regard for, you know, what's this likely to do? Forget setting aside national security altogether, which you shouldn't. But if you set that aside altogether, you're risking people's lives.
For people that don't get it, you know, the relationship with the media and between the media and, I don't want to call them intelligence agencies, let's put it that way. Is it commonplace for the media to run something by, vet it through intelligence first, and say, you know, is this going to really harm the country? What's going to happen if we publish this? Or do they just go and publish what they want?
It is common. And the responsible press, you know, and I'm talking about the major dailies, mm-hmm. If you make a case, you can say something like, look, can you adjust this story in the following way? Or could you remove this name? Or could you take out this place? And, you know, the press often agrees, not always. I was once in a meeting with a major New York international daily, and we were trying to make a case, and they basically said, you know, we're not persuaded. Mm. And that's the nature of the intelligence world in a democracy.
Did that do any damage? I'm not trying to get into the weeds here, but I just wonder, as an example, they went to you, you said, no, really, we should change this, change that, and they said, no, we're going to do it the way we want. Did that hurt the country in any way? You don't have to tell me how or anything.
in that specific example, I don't think it did. But let me give you one where it did. We had Osama bin Laden on his cell phone, and we had it for years. And a newspaper published the fact that we had him, and then very instant this publication came out, we never heard him on his cell phone again. I don't think he ever used his cell phone again.
So I guess I don't understand where the motivation would be. I understand freedom of the press, et cetera, but why would you purposely publish something that's going to hurt the country?
Well, I think, you know, bear in mind that Snowden was a very young man, and very young men often do really stupid things. And I don't think that he thought this through at all well. And I think there's a strong element. You know, you remember Aldrich Ames and Robert Hansen. Mm-hmm. They felt that their intellects were undervalued by their agencies. And I suspect Snowden went through the same sort of thing, that he thought he was smarter than everybody else and deserved to be in a much more senior position. So I think a lot of it is self-aggrandizement.
All right, we're going to take a break when we come back. I'd like to follow up on that a little bit if we could. And
sure.
Has anything changed about it? And you look at Chelsea Manning and some other leaks or information that's been released. Have we changed who gets access to that information? Because it seems like a lot to give to a 21, 22-year-old. And that's
yep.
not to demean them at all. It's just like you're saying, when you're 21, you're kind of still growing up, or at least I think
yep.
that. And all of a sudden, we're trusting you with the nation's secrets. 620, time now, traffic, WWL. We're talking about something of a little more import here. Edward Snowden says he wants to come back to the United States. Bob Dietz, our guest, professor of public policy at George Mason University, senior counselor to the director of the CIA, and former general counsel at the NSA. Nice enough to join us, and this man has been there, done that, and he knows what he's talking about. So when it comes to Bob, with whom we trust the information of the country, the secrets, is 21 too young, 22, 23?
Oh, you know, that occasionally is talked about, but realistically, one cannot do anything about that. You know, and it's just taking NSA as an example. They need the sort of the best computer whizzes that one can imagine, and so you're talking about people right out of the leading engineering schools in the country, and they're 21, 22 years old. So realistically, no. And if you're old enough to vote, you're not old enough to have a security clearance. That'd be rough. But certainly, they need oversight. And you're aware of the lawsuit the government has filed to claim any profits that Snowden makes. That's another sort of deterrent.
When it comes to Israel, what's going on? Oh, let me clean this up too. We should say, to be fair, the vast majority of 20-somethings that are entrusted with national secrets, keep them. It's the ones that don't that we hear about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was with General Hayden, the former director of CIA, former director of NSA. We were at going down to the CIA cafeteria, and when we walked in, General Hayden made some quip about how these look like high school kids in a cafeteria. Because after 9/11, both NSA, CIA, and other members of the intelligence community did lots of hiring, and these were all young kids, and you know, they were really smart and eager and so forth, and were doing a very good job.
That's where the battle has changed, right? Cyberspace. Let me ask yep. you about Israel. What's going on there with the elections, the stability, et cetera, of the government?
Well, it's worrisome because it looks like this election is simply a parallel to the prior election back in, when was it, April?
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing this increasingly across Western Europe, where governments tend to be divided, and the result is it's very difficult to go forward, either from the, if you're on the left side or the right side. And I think that Netanyahu's government is going to be forced to, or his party is going to be forced to try to find some sort of arrangement with another party to form a government. And that means, lots and lots of compromises.
The president seems to have not gotten involved this time as much as he did last time, or did I miss something?
No, I think that's right. And, you know, traditionally, the U.S., we don't involve ourselves in other nations' elections because we don't want them involved in ours. President Trump has kind of broken the mold on that.
But this time, not so much.
Not so much this time, correct.
So what is the point of contention in Israel? The dividing point is over what?
The dividing point is over, the big dividing point is how are we going to treat the Palestinians? A subset of that is, what are we going to do with the West Bank? The international law has never recognized, nor has Israel asserted, ownership of the West Bank. But Netanyahu's increasingly calling for the development of the West Bank with housing settlements. And that's unsettling to many people, not only in sort of the world generally, but also inside Israel.
We only have 30 seconds. This is a complex question. I hate to do this, Bob, but should we involve ourselves defending Saudi Arabia, or do they have enough money, enough military equipment to do it themselves?
I think we need to provide assistance, but we certainly don't need to provide them with money or free weapons. And by and large, they pay for, they spend a lot of money on U.S. weaponry.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, Bob.
Absolutely.
Have a good day. Pleasure as always. Bob Dietz, professor of public policy at George Mason University, senior counselor to the director of the CIA, and former general counsel at the National Security Agency. More when we come back. Right now we pause for WWL First News. And you know what that means. Dave Cohen.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.